Hello and welcome to another episode of Consumer, the European podcast of the Consumer Choice Center. As always, I'm your host, Bill Wirtz. On this episode 162, on June 20th, 2024, I hope you are having a wonderful month of June and you gearing up for those summer holidays. I have a much shorter episode this week, in the sense that I had to cut some corners there with scheduling and everything. But I do have a guest this week. His name is Jan Burdinski. You heard him on the podcast before. He's a managing partner at Berlin Communication, and he focuses on all things car manufacturing and trade. So we're talking about Chinese retaliation against potential tariffs on electric vehicles coming from the European Union. Also wanted to let you know that we are trying to get Ryanair back on track, and we do have something scheduled next week with them. So let's find out. Are they going to cancel on us again? We'll keep you in the loop. You'll find out next week on the Thursday episode whether we can make that happen or not. In any case, here's going to be the interview with Jan Burdinski. All right, so we have Jan Burdinski back. I just introed him in the pre-recording, and you've heard him on the podcast before, and this is just a perfect opportunity to have him back because he's an expert in this field. Because we're having a conversation in the EU about car tariffs and these tariffs being imposed on Chinese vehicles. Electric vehicles are specifically the target. I know a lot of you may be confused because you don't want to read through the AP news or the Politico newsletters or whatever there is. So Jan Burdinski is here to give us all the rundown. So Jan, first off, what is the deal here? Why is everyone so upset about these different rates of cars and what's allowed to come in and how much they're supposed to cost? Explain what the political conversation is.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks for having me back. It's an honor and a privilege. You know, when you import or when you export cars into the European Union, normally the WTO tariffs of 10% apply. This is what what BMW pays for the cars that come from Spartanburg, and of course also BMW pays for the iX3 that is coming from someplace in China where BMW has manufacturing, and this is the regular procedure. So the European Union, not only on solar panels and on batteries and on so many other parts, is indicating that the Chinese are irregularly subsidizing their car industry and believe that the Chinese car manufacturers could be flooding the European market with cheap battery powered vehicles. One would normally think that, since we passed the Green Deal legislation and we are very much in favor of battery-powered vehicles, and especially since the Chinese vehicles, the Chinese products that is coming to the European market are considerably cheaper than the European products and, what our premium brands are doing, but also, of course, the volume manufacturers, that you would say, we embrace this and we are happy to have, a choice available for consumers that, in the range of 20 to 25,000, whereas the average battery-powered vehicle at the moment in Europe sells for roughly 50,000. 50,000, the average car compared to an entry-level new vehicle with a combustion engine for roughly 12,000, 13,000, of course, is a big gap, and that's why sales for electric vehicles have stalled a little bit, sometimes even in a decline due to, the run out of subsidies that, some member states have applied. At the moment, and this is why the move from the Commission comes a little bit as a surprise, apart from the bigger geopolitical part of China bashing, the Chinese share of new vehicles in Europe is roughly 1%. So it is not a Chinese flood, basically pushing the European auto manufacturers to the sidelines, but it's a tiny, tiny fraction. And that's why the European Commission, has ruled that this is not about an existing threat to the OEMs, like original equipment manufacturers, but a potential future threat for which they already take these drastic measures. Is that reasonable? I don't know. Should the European Union, who have legislated in this, in the, you know, in the past 5 years with the still in office commission of Ursula von der Leyen, they have embraced electric vehicles over everything else. Yet they have you know, ruled to have a phase out of combustion engine vehicles by 2035, and they see that they run into huge problems to meet the targets of electric vehicles sold, meet their targets of infrastructure and sold, and meet their targets of the transport sector actually, you know, being in line with, you know, on the path to a zero carbon economy in 2050.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that there is the idea of not trying to repeat the solar panel situations. Like sometimes this is mentioned, it's like, oh, with solar panels, we try to do the transition. Our producers get undercut by much cheaper solar panels from China. We've made that mistake of allowing too much free trade, and that's why we need to get active on this early. Is this a bit of a trauma there at Berlaymont in Brussels to try and not repeat that mistake?
It could be a trauma, but you know, there's also a tremendous difference between the solar panel industry and the car industry. A solar panel basically, you know, you go into one of these do it your own markets and you get one under your arms and you march off, or you have, you know, you have an engineer coming and put them up your roof. So this is, and this is a very fast moving good. Whereas, you know, a car that is manufactured in China is being put on a boat or a train, is being brought here over 2-3 weeks, then brought to the, you know, I mean, it's like it takes two and a half, three months before actually the product can be brought to the customer. Therefore, this is, it's, you know, and the entire process of selling a vehicle, a solar panel, you know, it's a medium sized investment. A car is a serious investment for most of us, and this is not something you do, you know, you take lightly. And you also, you know, if you have had, you know, a trustful relationship with your auto manufacturer of choice, be that, you know, BMW, be that Peugeot, be that Fiat or whoever, or Jaguar Land Rover, you know, you don't just like, you know, overnight say like, well, you know, I abandon my faithful relationship to that brand and I go for the next cheap, fancy Chinese car. But then, you know, looking at it, you know, from like and I try to be objective here, looking at it from like 50,000 feet, these cars are not so bad anymore. You know, like quality wise, they, you know, they like safety wise, they fulfill all the standards. And interestingly, on the, you know, on the entertainment part, you know, what you get when you look at the screen and the size of the screen and the services offered on the screen, I mean, they are out competing the offers of the European manufacturers. But you know, then on this, I'm not a protectionist European. I'm a free marketeer, and I believe if their product is better and cheaper, and you know, and we will have to see how much of the, you know, of the price gap actually is due to illegal subsidies from the Chinese central government, and how much is just because they are, you know, they are producing more efficiently and they have been doing a very good job in adapting European manufacturing methods by, you know, then putting their Chinese twist on this. And then, you know, these cars are good now. And I do understand why more and more consumers are actually looking at them and feel tempted to leave their Citroëns behind.
I mean, I can see that as well. And what is interesting to me is that the Chinese government is not reacting by doing the same for European EVs. It says instead that it's looking into the pork imports from Europe. So it makes it, we're shifting from vehicles to agriculture. Is this a recognition by the Chinese government that there may be a point, and if only there was more investigation going on, it could, you know, the WTO could figure out that there is undue subsidy schemes going on? Or do you think that this is, you know, they had to do something, so they picked pork?
You know, this is, you try to pick a sector that hurts the other person's most. You know, if they wanted to anger the French, they would retaliate on champagne, or on, I don't know what, maybe on French wine or French dairy.
A cognac was in the conversation, right?
Cognac, yes. You know, just like when we had the discussions with the Americans, I think we put Harley Davidson on the list. Why? Because everyone loves them, and the Americans are very proud of their unique brand. And so here on the pork, I think it is a way of the Chinese to put, especially the Spanish, in the field of the Germans vis-a-vis the French. You know, the interesting thing in the automotive sector, Germany is, highly exposed is an underestimation. In China, Volkswagen has 40% sales in China, Daimler and BMW, it's like a third of their global sales that is happening there. Whereas the French basically don't sell any cars in China. So, it's more, it looks like, and, we all remember how Ursula von der Leyen became commission president. It was not Angela Merkel, it was Emmanuel Macron who made her commission president. And it was also, Merkel wanted nothing of the recovery fund, whereas Macron wanted, a cool billion. And in the end, we got 750 million as the compromise that Ursula von der Leyen upped again. And so we see again that the commission is very French driven, French centric and French loving. And the real threat of this is that, with this one-sided measure, that is, of course, it has to be reconfirmed, and there's going to be negotiations from now till October. But if it really comes into effect, then we will see massive retaliation on German car, on German car manufacturers, and they will lose a lot of their China business, and that in effect could then jeopardize, probably not the sheer existence of Volkswagen and Daimler, but it would seriously hurt them, and of course the European shareholders.
Well, let's qualify the politics behind this already, and you've hinted at this already. I think Ursula von der Leyen, not sure also with this week's dinner having not yielded a clear majority on whether she can return to the European Commission, seems to be making some moves to make the case to keep her in power. So would you say that this move is sort of a political performative gesturing? Is there no real calculation behind this? Because I wouldn't be surprised. And, in the field of agriculture that I know a lot better, there's been a lot of that going on in the past 5 years. Do you think this is just one of those measures that might be retracted and it's just like signaling towards the right people, like, we stand behind you? Or do you think there was actually a commission team that did the calculation and came up with this as the best policy? What's your view?
There is, I spoke to some of the, representatives of the companies that were targeted, and there is a commission team there that has looked at some of the Chinese manufacturers. That's why there's quite a different, punishment on them. BYD only has 17% tariffs on top, whereas SAIC gets 38%. The latter because they have been totally non-cooperative. At least that's what the media tells us. And maybe they have not, because they could, within a couple of months, they could just like use some of the manufacturing capacities that the Volkswagen Group has in Europe, and move their manufacturing here. And the total number of units that SAIC is selling in Europe is neglectable. BYD, of course, is a much bigger fish, but they seem to have cooperated very well with the European Commission. The thing from the manufacturer's point of view, there's it's not a gazillion, but there's a huge number of manufacturers who are producing in China. Let alone our European OEMs who are also producing there, or Tesla with their Shanghai plant that is also shipping a lot of cars here. And there's only a very small number of, commission bureaucrats who are looking into this, who has gotten how much subsidies in this way. In the end, my you know, my estimation is they will find a little bit of support, but not in the way or to the scale that it was done on the solar panel sector, and they will have to retract and probably pull back a lot of what they are imposing now. It is a, you know, it's a muscle game with the Chinese, you know, like who's going to blink first. If I was a Chinese negotiator, I would call their bluff. And I think in the end, the Europeans will not look good when the bluff is called.
Well, interesting prediction there. I had one more question before we run out of time on our segment here, which is this potential reconsideration of the internal combustion engine ban by 2035, at least for new vehicles. All the promises we've heard on electrifying individual transport, where do you see this going with an upcoming commission? I mean, it's difficult to make predictions at this point, but where do you see this going? And also, because you've alluded to some of it, if we want to have more electric vehicles on the road, we should be happy about, you know, imports that are better. But what does it take for Europe to up its game also? Because I think a lot of us would probably be happy about manufacturers in Europe to also, you know, match the quality and performance of vehicles coming from Asia. But what does it actually take? Is there any policy changes that can be made, or are the manufacturers just not up to speed?
You know, there's a person much smarter than me, you know, the CEO of Stellantis, Mr. Tavares. He once, when he was ASEA president, he said, you know, there's three elements that make battery-powered vehicles a success. It's affordability. We're not there yet. It is safety. Yes, safety we can. And it's convenience. And convenience means you can charge your car, you know, at home or where you work or on the road, and, you know, fast charging, slow charging, you have, you know, and looking at the reality and looking at the major obstacles to put enough charging infrastructure, across Europe. There's permitting. It takes years to put up these charging at the potential at the highway resting areas, et cetera, et cetera. And plus, you know, all over the streets. Likely, you know, when we reach 2030 and we, you know, we are supposed to have something like 8 to 10 million publicly accessible charge posts out there, we're probably going to have 1 million, maybe 1.5 million. So we are way short. And the convenience argument is the one that makes me very skeptical whether the self-imposed goal of the European Union to be to be electric only, not only battery electric, but also fuel cell electric, but to be electric only by 2035 is actually achievable. And then, you know, the European legislators, we already see some signs of this are debating whether the new commission might actually show a little bit of flexibility, and, you know, just like as the German Minister of Transport has demanded, and will allow zero carbon renewable e-fuels into the mix by 2035. And Bill, if you give me, going back to the tariffs and just like an absurd example on how, you know, how this will apply to European manufacturers. There's a small and medium enterprise from the Pfalz, so it's one of the regions in Germany, not too far from your home in Luxembourg. So they are designing and engineering an electric car, and just like Apple, who is an American company who lets the manufacturing be done in China, they also do this. And so there is a ship currently on its way from China to Europe. It will arrive after July 4th, which means that this company, it's not a big company called Ilaris, they are subject to an extra punitive 21% of tariffs on the cars, which shows that mid game, you know, the cars are on the ship. It's not that, you know, half a year before. No, the cars are on the ship, and mid game, someone is changing the rules, and you have to, you know, the vehicles there, it's worth like $40-50 million, which means they have to pay an extra $10 million in cash to offload the cars and put this on a special account where maybe they get it back, maybe they don't. if they don't get it back, I mean, how much are they supposed to charge their customers for this, including the punitive damage, the punitive tariffs or not? And this is one of the, you know, one of the great examples why well-intended and well-done is sometimes very much the opposite. And I do hope that, you know, the Europeans will come to their senses and stop this bullshit of putting tariffs on Chinese manufactured cars, be them from Chinese manufacturers, from American manufacturers, or from European manufacturers.
Well, that's I love the practical example there. I think that really illustrates the point very well. Jan Budinski, thank you so much. Where can people find out more about what you do?
Well, this is my personal Twitter account, Burdinsky. My professional account at Berlin_affairs, and affairs not in the, you know, the juicy part, but more in the public affairs part. And of course, Jan Burdinsky, you will find me on LinkedIn, where I post a lot of stories on automotive, on hydrogen, on battery electric vehicles, and on everything that makes Europe more competitive.
Well, Jan, thank you so much for joining the Consumer Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that concludes this week's episode of Consumer. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow Consumer Choice Center at Consumer Choice C on X, and find us also on Instagram. And we have a Telegram channel also where you can keep up to date with all the news that we have. You can find all of that on consumerchoicecenter.org. And if you want to make a donation, you can do so by going on consumerchoicecenter.org/donate, where we take your euros, dollars, and cryptocurrency, whatever you prefer. So thank you so much, and you'll hear me next week.